Anyway, we got Josh coming up here. Arad's just sitting there talking trades with Josh. I'm looking at, like, Arad is so comfortable. I think he's like, do you think Ananobi's going to get dealt? What's your read on this situation? Why don't we ask him on the air? Here's our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg. What's up, Josh?
Not much, Brian. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing very well. There's actually a lot of breaking news in the NFL right now, where Sean Payton's on his way to Denver, yeah. D'Amico Ryan's on his way to Houston, and there's rumors in the NBA. We got rumors, and Shams Charania, who's as connected as anybody in the NBA, has written an article for The Athletic, and he's been talking about it on his shows, that OG Anunoby is officially, I don't know if he's on the market, but I think the way he phrased it was, the Raptors are taking calls on OG. They're taking calls. So what do you read into that? What does that mean? Define that for us.
Yeah, well, I certainly wouldn't use the words breaking news for that. I'm not even sure I'd use the word news. I think people are reacting to the report, certainly, that the Raptors are taking calls. But the reality is, and we've talked about this, even dating back to the summer, the Raptors have been taking calls on OG Anunoby for a while now. They've been taking calls on basically everybody on the team except for Scotty Barnes. I've reported this as well. Scotty Barnes is the only player where teams are getting hung up on when they ask about him. That was the case even with the Kevin Durant stuff over the summer. But outside of that, like, the Raptors are not saying no to the potential, the option of moving anybody. They're listening, but I would note there's a big difference between listening to offers and then actively shopping a player. And as far as I understand, the Raptors, even in the summer, were not shopping OG Anunoby. They're not shopping him now. They're not shopping Van Vliet or Siakam. But the great thing about having a number of players that are highly coveted, and of course, you have to mention this, the fact that the Raptors probably getting the most attention around the NBA they've gotten since winning the championship. Everybody's talking about the Raptors as a team that could swing the trade deadline, a team that people expect to be active. So the great thing about that is when you're in that position, you don't really have to make calls. You don't have to engage teams because teams are calling you, and that's exactly what's happening right now. The Raptors are having a lot of conversations, and they're weighing all of their options and all of that. Like, as far as I've heard, nothing's changed over the last few weeks in terms of the Raptors still deciding what direction they're going to go in. And guess what? They're going to be deciding for the better part of the next 10 days because there's no reason to believe they're anywhere close to making a deal, nor should they be, right? Like, if you're the Raptors, if you're really any team right now, but especially the Raptors, you're not making a decision until you absolutely have to, because assuming you do make a move, you want the best offer that's out there, and the best offer that's out there probably won't present itself until February 9th. So, yeah, up until that point, I imagine they're going to be taking a lot of calls on a lot of guys.
Jay Lou, do you think that game last night was just example A, or the best example of why this team should move on and try to build in the next couple of years? It was just like, they were so dialed in the third quarter, from what I watched. It's like, how does this team ever lose a game? But they just can't sustain it. They ultimately lose it. And we were talking at the beginning of the show, Devin Booker wasn't even playing last night. So it's like, why keep thinking that this is going to evolve into something better than it's what it actually is?
Well, that's just it. And I would look at it on both sides of it. Like, I don't think everyone was so amped up going into this road trip as if, like, these seven games were going to determine the direction of this team and going to determine the season. And I get it. We're at the point of the season where every game sort of seems like a referendum on this team and the season. But the reality is, we're more than 50 games into the season, and at this point, the Raptors are who they are. Like, I'm not surprised by anything that we've seen, certainly not last night in Phoenix, but even on the road trip in general. Like, they've had moments where they've looked really good on the road trip. They've had moments where they haven't looked good on the road trip. They're 2-2 right now on the road trip, and is anybody going to be shocked when they finish probably 3-4, maybe 4-3? But that's the type of team they are right now. They're an average team. They're a 500 caliber team that just happens to be below 500 right now. But, like, that's what you can expect from average teams, is they're up and they're down. I laugh whenever I hear that narrative. And listen, there are a lot of really good reporters that I respect around the NBA that have run with that narrative recently, that the Raptors will make their decision based on what happens here on the road trip. But it doesn't make any sense. These are decisions, like, whether they want to go all in on the tank or push forward for the play-in or whatever they decide to do this season, yeah, that's going to factor into the decision that they make at the deadline, but there's way more to it than that. Whatever they do or don't do at the deadline will impact the future of this franchise for years to come. These are huge, far-reaching, franchise-altering decisions, and the people that are in charge are way too smart to make those decisions on the whim of one game or two games, or in this case, a seven-game road trip. They're going to look at the totality of their evaluation and probably most importantly make the decisions based on what the market looks like, what's out there for them on February 9th. If it makes sense, they're going to do it. If it doesn't, they're not going to do it. I don't think that their mind is going to be changed by what happens here over the next three games.
They played 52 games.
Yeah, it's not like they're watching that Suns game.
No,
being like, maybe we should keep this team.
Like, there's a ton of sample size on what they are. That doesn't mean they can't get in. That's a different story. They could,
but they're not going to change.
But it doesn't exactly games, big picture. You're not going to see anything in the next 5 days, 6 days on this road.
Is enough.
That's a lot of games. That's a lot of games. And the thing is with Ananobi, what separates him from Trent and Van Vliet is they got him under control next year.
Yeah.
So, from my standpoint, Josh, if you're going to trade him between now and the deadline, it signals two things. One, you got a massive, massive haul in return. Like you're not just trading him to trade him. That makes absolutely no sense. If someone offers the Raptors a massive haul, then I think they'll end up doing it. Secondly, if that haul is there and they decide to unload Ananobi, what they are likely telling us, and what I think probably should be happening anyway, is that they have the full intention of being the fifth worst team in the NBA, the sixth worst team in the NBA. Like, you look at the standings, there's a chance Orlando could catch them. There's a chance. They're not, quote-unquote, catching Charlotte, San Antonio, Detroit, Houston. Those are the worst teams in the league. The best odds they could possibly get are the fifth best odds at that top pick. But that's probably worth something. And, you know, if they unload Ananobi, we just saw it. He wasn't playing last night either. He's not playing on the rest of this trip. They are a significantly worse team without him. And if you unload Fred on top of that or Gary Trent on top of that, there's a chance they could, you know, be bottom five, bottom six. And that's probably worth going for if you feel like this draft is something, you know, that could truly change your future.
Yeah, but the counterargument is there's a chance they could be that bad even with these guys based on what we've seen here over the last few months. I think there are a couple reasons to trade Ananobi right now, and you mentioned a few of them. One, his value is really high as it's probably ever been in his career, in part because, for the most part, he's been able to stay healthy this year. He's also having a really good season. And then the second thing is it's a seller's market right now. There aren't a lot of teams that are shopping their star players, which is why you hear so much about the Raptors guys. But the counter argument to that would be, are those things not going to be true in a few months from now in the summer when theoretically there are going to be a lot more players available? So if there's something specific you're looking for Ananobi, let me say this, because everyone keeps talking about draft picks with OG. Could they get two draft picks? Could they get three draft picks? Why does that, I'm not sure that makes sense for the Raptors to trade OG for a haul of draft picks, unless, of course, they're going down the full rebuild path. Like, if you're trading Siakam and Van Vliet and all those guys, get as many draft picks as you can. But as long as you're keeping Van Vliet and re-signing him over the offseason, and that's a whole other topic, if you're keeping Siakam, those guys are going to be 29. You're probably going to want to maximize their prime over the next few years. You're probably not thinking draft picks. If you're moving OG in that scenario, you want maybe some draft capital, but guys that are going to step in and help you right now, it's probably more of a roster balancing thing. I like to use the Sacramento-Indiana trade last year, Halliburton for Sabonis, as kind of a blueprint there for trading from an area of strength to address an area of weakness. Maybe that's what an Ananobi trade looks like. But again, wouldn't that make more sense in the summer when more players are available? So I agree with you there. I think they're not feeling any kind of urgency or rush in an Ananobi trade. They're going to listen to offers, and if something blows them away, sure. But I think there's far more urgency to deal with a potential Van Vliet or Trent situation, just because, I mean, officially, you don't have to make a decision on them and their contract until the end of June, but essentially, the Raptors will be deciding whether or not they want to re-sign Gary Trent Jr. and Fred Van Vliet in the next 10 days. If you're trading them, it's because you can't justify paying them what they're going to get this summer with all the other obligations you have to make. If you're keeping them, you can't afford to lose those guys for nothing. They don't have the depth to afford that. If you're keeping them, it's because you plan on re-signing those guys this summer.
Don't you think, Josh, they would know now on Van Fleet if they're going to trade him? And do you think this situation is at all comparable to Lowry when they decided to keep him through the deadline?
Well, I think the market is similar to what the market was for Lowry at that deadline, because you've got a whole bunch of teams that are thinking, okay, well, why would I give up serious assets for this guy right now when I could either, A, sign him during the offseason for the teams that have cap space, or teams that are probably also thinking, B, well, why am I giving up a lot for this guy when he could just flat out leave in a few months from now? The only teams that might really be interested right now are teams like the Clippers that don't have the cap space to sign him. But even teams like that, like, how much are they willing to give up? So, yeah, I mean, I think to some degree it's going to come down to the market for guys like Van Vliet and Trent, just because I think, like, ultimately if you're making a deal, it depends what's being offered. But I agree with you, Jonas. Like, I think for those guys, you have a pretty good idea what you want to do with those two, because that's been the evaluation over the last few months. In addition to all this, like, where are we headed type of thing, a big part of it has to be evaluating, or I should say projecting, what the free agent markets are going to look like for Trent and Van Vliet. So that means, how much are they going to want? And most importantly, what's a realistic number for them based on the teams that could theoretically be interested and what they have to spend? And like I said, the Raptors have to decide, are they willing to bring those guys back at that cost? And if the answer is no, you can't let those guys walk for nothing. I mentioned the organizational depth. They don't have enough of it to justify letting those guys walk. And because, and this is a big part of it too, the Raptors are probably going to be an above cap team even if they let those guys walk, meaning they don't have the money to go out and replace those guys in free agency. So they've got to do their free agent shopping now, essentially.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting week or so, week and a half, between now and the deadline. And then beyond that, there's still going to be a lot of questions in terms of what Masai and Bobby Webster decide to do to try to get this team back on the same path. On top of that, you know, the uncertainty of Nick Nurse, his future, what's going to happen there. There's a lot to get into. You'll be all over it. Always appreciate you taking time. Thank you, Josh.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Josh Lewenberger, Raptors reporter. Yeah, the Nick Nurse stuff, I mean, that it seems like the players, I mean, if you're losing, oh, you could speak to this, you just don't like the coach. Like, that's generally how it goes. It's not that you hate the coach, but
especially when you have a championship pedigree coach, where it's like, I tell you guys what to do and you just can't execute it, can you? I give you my thing and I know it works, but you guys just can't do it. So it just gets to a point where he's always right and you're a bunch of dummies and you're not good enough for him. And there's a lot of tension there.
Well, Jeff,
it's like the idea of losing your mind when you know the season's kind of lost. It's like, really? You got to be a hero and do that? But you got to continue to press buttons and play to win. You can't just completely mail in a season.
But do you guys think there's a point where the message just stops getting through? Like, I was just, as Jeff was talking, I was thinking of Paul Maurice in Winnipeg and how it just, like, after a certain point it just becomes like, this guy, like,
yeah, I think
I'm sick of seeing this guy's
yeah
face.
Exactly.
Well, I think there's truth in that, and I think more so with the guys who have been here for a while, like Van Vliet,
which
possibly
is like their
Siakam,
core, all the guys they play.
Absolutely. But the team's not good enough. Like, it sounds like the front office isn't happy with him because he drives these guys into the ground with minutes. But his counter would be the bench.
Like, who
sucks.
Do you want me to play?
Who do you want me to play?
Yeah.
You know, who am I putting on the court?
It's fair.
And it
that's
is absolutely
the coaches,
fair.
That's what the coaches fire back with. I'm going to play these guys so much because you haven't given me anybody else
exactly.
I want to put out there.
Exactly. And I think that's become true again through 52 games. This is a flawed roster. That's on the front office. That's
yeah,
on.
He
that's
probably
on
had the Mike Babcock clause in there, where the filling out the lineup sheet, I decide who goes out in the court. You're not telling me
absolutely.
Who's going out there.
Absolutely, I'm playing Van Vliet 40 minutes, even if he's banged up. I'm playing Ananobi. I mean, that's what's happened all year, and it's still not good enough because they're out of the playoffs looking in.
Yeah. Speaking of the coaches getting the first round pick, like Peyton, do you think the Leafs would have given up a first round pick to get Babs here back in the day?
No,
because of how high the like it was such a high pick.
What year was it? 15?
Yeah, he
so
was the Marner draft
Marner.
And then the Matthews draft.
Yeah, so there's no
they're
chance.
Not trading that. But you know what's coming in here? Ian Rappaport has got a report. We'll come back and tell you what it is.
Tease it.
It makes Denver look like a disaster of an operation. Jesus, an absolute disaster. We'll tell you about that next.